Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach Brittle, here with Laura Heck. This is Last Call. If you're interested in the workshop that we have on February 9th and 10th, it's a great Valentine's Day gift, but you need to register yesterday, basically. If you're interested in doing that, go ahead and stop the podcast right now. Go to marriagetherapyradio.com, click on the workshop box, and you can go ahead and register. There's still time. We'll get your materials out to you, and we'll see you Friday night. If that's not your jam, there's all kinds of ways that you can stay connected. Don't forget that you can get a discount off the Escapely escape room boxes if you live in a major city. That's escapely.com. You can use code MTR20, I think it is. The next handful of episodes will be us talking to different folks, focusing on different areas of expertise. We've got a conversation coming up around ADHD, which I know is on a lot of people's minds. A couple of new folks who are pioneering work today in couples therapy and folks who have been around forever. It's going to be a good time. I'm really looking forward to learning a lot. I think you will too. For now, Laura and I are talking about marital collusion. What does it mean to collude with one another in a relationship, which we do sometimes passively, sometimes actively, and how we can do it mainly more effectively? This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
So why do you think you're not in a great mood?
It's actually really practical. I took my car in to get it serviced this morning, and I got there. Yeah. They're like, oh, we don't work on these kinds of cars. And it was all about what the dealer told me when I bought it. You take it to any one of these locations and you get it serviced. And then I didn't go to my usual place because I went to their place. And then when I got right. to their place, they were like, oh, we don't do that here. And I was like, I don't understand. This seems like mm-hmm. a simple thing mm-hmm. to tell people where to go. So now I'm like mad and I want to have a referendum on communication, that sort of thing. And
If that was to happen, I would feel like it was a personal attack on me for that my time wasn't worthy enough or that I wasn't worthy, or just I would get so pissed off that people were taking advantage of my time, that I wasn't important enough to have the right information and whatever. I don't know. It runs deep.
So I'm just annoyed because I planned I planned my whole day around doing this with my car.
And now this is your fancy boy car.
It's my new car. Yeah.
Yeah.
Newish car. And
do you know, we're taking our car back. We are downsizing. So we had a lease on, now you'll know. I mean, I'm sure you guys know we're fancy pants people and we spend a lot of money on nice things, but we have a BMW that we leased for 3 years and we're taking it back to the dealership. And downsizing, so I will be driving the Sprinter van. And it is a long Sprinter van, but that will be my daily driver from here on out because I like to minimize. And forever. So we'll just have the truck.
You're turning your Sprinter van into your daily car?
Yeah. Well, we need two vehicles because we both need a vehicle here in Bend. But we're just going to have, we had our car and our truck, and then the Sprinter van was the recreational vehicle. And we're turning the lease in and selling the BMW back, and we're going to just be driving the truck and the Sprinter van.
Okay.
How does that sound? That sounds like a little bit of I'm downsizing.
Yeah.
My husband does not like it.
You're downsizing, except you're getting bigger in the car that you drive.
I know. He doesn't like it, but that's okay. What else is going on? I wanted to give an update because we had a couple of listeners that had asked, how is Holden doing? Because I've been really open with everything that's going on with my son. if this is your first time catching up, I'll tell you what's going on. So it's been, I don't know, maybe about 9 months. And my son, we just happened upon tumors in his brain because we went to just get like a routine. He had a bump on the back of his head. We thought maybe it was just fluid filled. His pediatrician was not concerned about it. So we went and we had an MRI done just to kind of see, because we were like, well, let's get the bump removed. And while we were getting an MRI on this bump on the back of his head, they discovered tumors in his brain. And with the tumors in his brain, they're bilateral. So they are both attached to the nerves on either side of his ear, in addition to a couple of other tumors that are in there. So it was obviously a huge shock. If you go back and listen, you'll hear lots of tears and processing in the last 9 months. But what happened from that point was that we discovered he has a diagnosis of NF2. And I'm going to botch it, but I'll just call it NF2. But basically, it's a genetic disorder where non-cancerous tumors form along the nervous system. So he has tumors in his brain and along his spine. And we started him on immunotherapy, and he's been doing immunotherapy for the last 3 months. So we had a baseline MRI done, looking at the number and the size of the tumors, as well as the hearing loss, because these tumors are on his nerves and his ears. And most people with NF2, I think all of them actually, end up going deaf at some point in their life. So we're tracking all of that. And the news, the update, is that he has stability, which is the best thing that we could look for. We don't anticipate, but we hope that these tumors will reduce in size, but stability is fantastic. It means that there's no further growth, there's no new tumors, and then also his audiogram showed that he has no further hearing loss in his right ear, and his left ear is fantastic. So this is something to celebrate, and I just wanted to give you an update because you had been so kind to ask what's going on with Holden. So yeah. Thank you for your prayers, because I know many of you. Yeah, it was really great. So that was my long-winded update on Hootie. And this is my way of also saying that I would love for you to donate, because we are raising money for research. It's a really rare disease. So on our website, if you go to Marriage Therapy Radio, you can donate $5, you can donate $500, whatever your resources. But I'm raising money this year specifically for research. Okay, that's my spiel. Yeah. Okay. What else is happening in your life?
I went away this weekend. I went away this last weekend to the East Coast to visit some friends.
I was with Matt Cain,
who you'll remember did our finances episode. He did an episode with us.
So. Yeah, he was a cool guy.
And that was fun. I got a day and a half with him, and then took a train down and visited another friend of mine in D.C. So I flew into Philadelphia. Then I took the train down to D.C. and I flew out of D.C. home. Uh-huh. It was like, I don't know, 4 days total. And it was like really fun. And it didn't cost that much. It cost plenty, like cost an airfare. But
right.
the return on investment was really, really high.
Yeah.
Like I got really good time with really good friends, old friends that I've known for like 30 years. And it was funny. It was with one of them, my best girlfriend. Her name is, doesn't matter what her name is, but because I'm going to talk about her on the internet. But I was at her house and she and her husband got in a fight.
Mm-hmm. It was, while you were at the house?
Literally, like, she was washing dishes. I was sitting at the counter watching her wash dishes, and he was behind me.
Uh-huh.
And they got into
And you were literally in the middle of the fight.
I was literally in the middle of their fight.
I love it. Oh, I would shrink hard.
I just sat there and I was like, just trying to be quiet. But, you know, I asked her about it the next morning. I said, was that a fight? You know, and she said, well, what do you mean? And I told her what I experienced. And you know what it was? It was really, really skilled. It was like really, it was a really artfully done fight, as though like if I was their therapist, I would have told them to do exactly what they did.
Uh-huh.
And it was wild to kind of be, I don't know, sort of case studying my own perspective, like having like a meta experience of my own experience of watching someone else argue, uh-huh. but doing it in a really well, like a really fine way. And they did, what did they do? They did two things that I thought were like really, really important that I think I've been beating this drum forever. But the number one was they had, they de-escalated, like, uh-huh. and it was skillfully done how they did it, like little breaths or little like pauses or little, you know, I'm going to walk out of the room and then walk back into the room and they stood next to each other, and it was, you know, it wasn't aggressive or violent or problematic. It wasn't even a big deal. Literally, it was about the dishwasher. Like, you know how we make fun of people arguing about the dishwasher?
Yeah, yeah. Don't put my pans in the dishwasher.
And then they were really good about de-escalating. And then with regard to repair, it was both of them. And he actually did it first, which was, I don't know. I was just making something up. Like, I don't even know if I really know what I'm talking about. I was just making it up. And she was like, well, I'm making it up too. And and then they managed to somehow get through the next piece of the puzzle, which was whatever the next thing we were doing, eating dessert or something. But it really beat the drum for me. Like, that's the thing. It's de-escalate and repair, de-escalate and repair, de-escalate and repair. I mean, that's the piece that's really critical when it comes to, I think, like, doing artful or skillful conflict.
Yeah.
And then she told me the next day, she goes, and we'll talk about it later. Like, we'll come back tonight when we're together and you guys are gone. Like, you guys was me and their college age daughter who was there. Like, we'll sit down and we'll debrief that. And it seemed like that, even that commitment to going back and figuring out, like, oh, what happened there was, I don't know. It just felt like super cool to watch and to kind of literally be like in a laboratory.
Yeah.
I felt maybe like I was like doing John's experiment, you know, the cameras were on the wall and
totally. Yeah. You're in a different role than you normally are. You get to just observe. I would love to be able to observe the couples in my life to see what they really do when they're frustrated with each other, because I only hear one version of it, you know, from a girlfriend, but I never actually get to see the people in my life do conflict. You know, it's funny. I was just thinking about, they probably knew how skilled they were at doing conflict, which is why they allowed you in on the conflict. Because I think that I see a lot of people try and nip conflict in the bud because they don't know how it's going to end. And that's the scary part. It's like, we don't do conflict. We avoid conflict because we can't handle it. We can't manage our own emotions. We don't know how it's going to end. But if you know the end of the script, and the end of the script is at some point we're going to de-escalate, at some point someone's going to give in, at some point we're going to apologize, acknowledge, whatever, and then we're going to circle back, then they probably have no problem at all letting other people get, you know, a free show to the...
I think there's that. I think they're also like, just how safe of a personality I am in their life, like that mattered too. But you're not wrong. I think if you agree as a couple that we know what the end of this is,
and
this is why I always talk about how like the best result of a conflict is makeup sex. Like, if we agree that we're going to get to intimacy, then you can kind of hang in there a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's a goal of feeling more connected, and sometimes you have to sort out differences. I mean, I think they were talking about whether or not you should put knives blade down or blade up in the dishwasher, and there's an argument for both. But these were only butter knives, so it doesn't really matter. You're not going to stab yourself on a butter knife. I mean, it was like so bizarre, like just. But I don't know. In terms of like what was on my mind, I kind of wanted to reflect that and give people a vision for like, what does it mean to like, to let a little thing stay a little thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Versus a little thing become a big thing.
Right.
It's de-escalate and repair. It's de-escalate and repair and de-escalate and repair.
Yeah.
Hey gang, if you're paying attention, you'll know that I remain committed to my motto that February is the new January. And if you're still looking for a way to lean into new resolutions, particularly around staying connected, I want to recommend the Paired app. Rebecca and I use this app pretty regularly. We get quizzes and games that play, and then there's always a cool question that comes up that can be a conversation starter for us that we're usually pretty interested in. You and your partner download the app and you pair together every day. That's why it's called Paired, P-A-I-R-E-D. Right now, Rebecca and I are in the middle of a question pack. So we get a new question every day. Right now, we're working on a pack called How Are You Really Feeling? And we're diving into different emotions about different things, creating new language around parenting or around free time or around work-life balance, and really kind of peeling layers back. These question packs are pretty cool too. There's one on rebuilding trust. There's one on changes since parenthood. There's 10 questions for new couples. There's really no shortage of how this might apply to you. I think I saw one recently, which I'm glad we're past, but it's the baby name pack. Again, I'm a professional. My job is to stay connected and relationally attuned. I do that way better in my office than I do at home. And Paired has really helped me out a lot. So whether you're just a few dates in or if you've been together for a very long time, why don't you go ahead and lighten the mood and have fun with your partner by using Paired. So I want you to head to paired.com/MTR, the website. Don't do it on your phone or else we don't get credit. But if you go, you'll get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign in for a subscription. Just head to paired.com/MTR, PAIRED.com/MTR to sign up today. Connect with your partner every day using Paired. A happier relationship starts here.
I have so many different like small things that I've been thinking about in relationships. Like actually, you know, I didn't even mention this, but one thing that has been coming up a lot is I've seen it in my personal life. I have seen it with clients recently where one partner may be not doing so hot or may not be tending to their own mental health. And over time, they've sort of slid into the new norm. And so I'll just kind of give a little bit of an example of maybe you struggle with depression and you haven't really treated the depression. Maybe you just it just sort of shows up and then you kind of cope with whatever skills you have at the moment. But over time, your depression has gotten higher and your coping skills might be, I just don't leave the house anymore, or I sleep in until noon, or I drink 3 glasses of wine. And so the coping skills continue to get bigger and bigger, and it becomes the new norm. And over time in the relationship, you don't even recognize the person, but your partner has been just kind of allowing that these new coping skills to become the norm. So an example might be, we got married. I recognized that there was some depression. We talked about it as a couple, but we didn't really deal with it. Now it's 15 years later and you stopped working. You're no longer working a job. You drink a bottle of wine a night. And you've put on 50 pounds because you're no longer working out and doing the things that you love. So the end result is, if we're not managing and paying attention to some of this like individual stuff, and you're in this partnership that allows for that slide to occur and it becomes the new norm, I was thinking about how almost toxic relationships can be if we allow the slide and that norm to occur. Because you might not allow that to happen if you were a single person. So I can kind of see how relationships can hold you accountable for being the best version of you, but also relationships can also lock you into a normalcy that just continues to deepen over time. So hopefully this is making sense, but I'm seeing it a lot in my practice, where you can be an agent of change as a partner, or you can lock your partner in to a slide that's unhealthy. And that's kind of an interesting thing that I wanted to bat around with you.
I'm trying to wrap my head around what you're saying. Like,
yeah,
it's almost like you're talking about like the sunk cost fallacy, where because I'm in this relationship and we have a kid or we have a mortgage or we have, you know, 7 years already, I'm going to ignore or forgive or not, you know, sort of not prioritize negative interaction or negative change or any change really, you know, whereas I think you're talking about, if I don't have this stuff, I can just bail. I can just be like, well, I'm not putting up with that. I'm going to go. I don't know if that's exactly what you're describing. But
that is interesting, because I have asked people, what keeps you in this relationship if you're so miserable, right? Like, let's just say I'm in this relationship with someone and they're depressed and all of the things I just talked about, right? Like they lost their job. They've put on a lot of weight.
Yeah.
They are miserable. They're sleeping, all of these things. Why are you still in this relationship? And it's because of all of the things that they've created together. It's the kids, it's the house, it's I'm not willing to give up on this person, this relationship, because we're so invested in other areas. That's one. But, you know, I want to go back to this idea of, in the relationship, you can be an agent for change, which is statistically why men are actually healthier as married men, because you have a partner who is reinforcing, saying things like, hey, maybe it's time for you to go to the dentist. Maybe it's time for you to check that mole out on your back. So statistically, men are healthier when they're married because they have that agent of change, you know, that person that's like reinforcing. But also the opposite can happen, where you're coping the best way you know how with something internal, and your partner is also kind of colluding with those coping skills, and it's deepening you in that stuckness. That's what I'm talking about. You can go one of two ways, right?
I think I hear what you're saying. Like, I started thinking almost exactly about something that happened to me yesterday, which was I was just sitting there minding my own business, My wife comes out of the bathroom. Brett comes out of the bathroom and she says, I think you need to go to the dentist.
Did she really say that?
What? She really did.
Is that why you smiled when they gave the dentist example? Because you got funky breath
or
what?
I was like, what is Laura talking about? And I was like, she's talking about this. And I had to make a choice, right? Rebecca was just like, and I was like, okay. She's like, well, you haven't been in a really long time, like a really long time. And I was like, how do you know? She's like, because I know when your dentist retired and I know because he goes to our church.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that you haven't found a new one. And we have a buddy who just like, not just became a dentist, who is a dentist. But I had to make a choice, right? Is this woman trying to control me? And like, she's saying something nasty about my mouth, or is she trying to like actually help me be healthier?
Yeah.
You know, and she probably had to make a choice about whether or not to note something that was observable and important to her, or just sort of participate in me not going to the dentist.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm still doing my whole flossing jam. So
yeah,
I feel like
great
I got my
hygiene.
Tooth king under control.
Mm-hmm.
But she had to make a choice and I had to make a choice. And it sounds like, you know, as she's standing there in the kitchen, or I guess if she was in the bathroom, thinking about whether or not to open her mouth, she's making this decision that you're describing, which is, does she collude in my sort of passive drift away from, let's call it dental hygiene?
Yeah.
Or does she offer me the gift of being my like accountability partner or my encourager in that space? And you're seeing that come up in your practice more.
I am. And what I'm seeing is like the 15-year accumulation of missed opportunities, missed conversations that becomes the new norm. Like it's really easy. And I said this to my running buddy. I said, wow, you are really fit right now. And he goes, really? And I said, well, I haven't seen you for 3 months. Like it's, you know, when you allow time to go, it can be pretty drastic. And there's a slow grind that can occur when we are building in these maladaptive coping mechanisms that seem normal, but if you were to take a step back and rewind 15 years and you're like, man, it's not normal to drink a bottle of wine every night, but it has become your norm. And so I think part of me is just asking our listeners, are you colluding with your partner's maladaptive coping mechanisms because it's become the new norm?
Well, that's called enabling, right? Like,
it is, but I'm really specifically not using that word enabling because I think it is a misused, over-treated word that I'd like to not use, just so that people don't already have some kind of an idea of what they think enabling is. Being an agent for change with your partner, are you willing to step in and say, your breath is funky? And it's time for you to go to the dentist. I know your breath is not funky because you have great hygiene, but you know, are you willing to offer your partner a mirror and say, this is different and what can we do to make it better?
I was thinking about that exact metaphor earlier, like a mirror.
Yeah.
It's called a mirror.
Mirror.
It's not a mirror.
Mirror. Yeah, and.
Okay. So what are you offering your clients? Like as they bring this into your office, like what are you suggesting or proposing as they grapple with this? Cause I think it's real. What do you think?
The first question that I would have is what's keeping you from addressing this with your partner? And what is it? And I have asked several partnerships what's keeping them. And the one I keep getting is I don't want to hurt their feelings. Or I don't want to embarrass them. It's about protection. I'm trying to protect my partner from feeling something that they're probably already feeling. Maybe it's even shame, right? Like they've been depressed. They've been trying to cope. We don't really talk about it. It's that thing that we don't talk about, but they're coping the best way that they know how. And I don't want to make them feel any worse. And that's the biggest reason that they are colluding with their partner's coping mechanisms. So that's the question that I would ask is like, what's keeping you from helping your partner in a better way?
Yeah.
That's one question that I have.
Yeah. Another question I have, I think would be too, is like, if your partner has say bad breath, are you telling them about it for you? Or are you telling them about it for them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the mirror.
Right.
Are you the mirror who is really trying to say, hey, just so you know, this is what it is. This is
Yeah.
This is the unvarnished truth of what you look like. Or are you trying to, like, you know, do you have your own agenda in it? Because mm-hmm. I think that's it. And, you know, I'm thinking about Rebecca and it was weird because something popped into her head. It's not because I had bad breath or because she's worried about my teeth or something. It's not like I'm bleeding when I floss or something, you know?
Right.
So she had some desire, I think, to legitimately be of help to me in the way that I think that you're describing.
Yeah.
That but I don't know that her silence in the months or years prior was collusion in my coping mechanism. So that's the thing I'm having a little bit of a hard time mm-hmm. wrapping my head around is how do you tell the difference, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you participate? Like, kind of the way I think about it too is you can't ask somebody to clear a bar that's higher than their own.
Okay.
So it's sort of like, how do you set the bar together?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we care about financial health, or we care about dental health, or we care about sexual health, or we care about, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Parenting choices. How do you invite them to? And I come back to, it's kind of the thing I always come back to, which is consent. Like, do you have consent to say?
Yeah.
And maybe that's the part that's missing, because
uh-huh.
if I tell him this, he's going to feel ashamed or she's going to feel embarrassed, you know?
Yeah.
And so I guess it has to flow out of a lot of trust probably.
Yeah. And I like that you said consent, because we do this in our household. We generally don't talk about each other's bodies unless it's loving and whatever it might be. But I don't have consent to turn to my husband and say, your pants are way too tight, buddy. You're spilling over. But we have had conversations where we have said we are both actively engaging in trying to be healthier and talked about consent. Do I have consent to remind you that you probably don't need that second portion? Or do I have consent? So we have specifically asked each other. So if you're listening to this episode, the question that I would pose to your partner is just kind of saying, like, what do you think about, like, the philosophy of our marriage? Do you think it's about us growing uh-huh. together and bettering each other and being able to sometimes have the consent to have hard conversations, because we know that the result is it's coming from the kindness of our heart to better the other person. And what I've heard a lot of people enter into this conversation is, I want to live a long, healthy life with you. I don't want to outlive you. I don't want to outplay you. I want you by my side. And what that means is that I might have to have some hard conversations pointing out where you have been coping with a bad knee or a bad hip or a mole that I would like for you to get under control so that we can do life together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the big picture is just sort of saying, like, are we here to point out each other's flaws? No, but are we here to support each other in growing? I think so.
Yeah. I think it also becomes a question of, like, don't I have a responsibility to care for you in that way?
Yeah.
Like,
isn't that the assumption?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has to be, I mean, if you're talking about people who are kind of been in the grind for a little while, and maybe they've relaxed their sense of, like, how they're trying to, you know, better one another or better themselves, maybe it does call for some kind of renewal, which today is the perfect day to talk about that, because February is the new January. Today's February 1st. And, you know, I think if you've been listening to the podcast for, you know, it's a big day for me. It's like my New Year's holiday.
Mm-hmm. Because something big is going to happen today.
I am turning it all over. I took my car in.
Yep.
Whoops. My whole life is changing starting right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think you need occasional check-ins, right? Like, we use things like New Year's or the holidays or February 1st or whatever it is to reevaluate where we're at. And I think if you're not doing that on a consistent enough basis, it's easy to fall into old patterns.
Yeah. Right?
It's easy to go, oh, we're just lapsing and we're doing this thing one more time. And remember when we talked about how the idea that relationships are functionally on a 3-year cycle?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you sort of, so maybe it is like about every 3 years you need to check in and go, how are we doing against, I mean, it might be 3 years since I've been to the dentist.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, how are we doing on our shared pursuit of X?
Yeah.
Health, financial mm-hmm. security, mm-hmm. you know, adventure, whatever it is. Because you got to find a way to bust your clients out of this question, right? Like this thing that you're facing is, you know, what's the difference between collusion and, say, criticism? Mm-hmm. If I have to choose between either saying nothing or saying something.
Right.
I think maybe in the middle there is consent to pursue our shared agenda.
Gently. Yeah. Our shared agenda. That's a good idea of, you know, what is the shared agenda? Where are we going? So, I mean, we kind of dabbled into a topic that branches off into a lot of other areas of growth for relationships. But can we do a quick check-in on how we're doing so far with our New Year's resolutions? Because I had a few that I had mentioned on the podcast, and I just wanted to give a little bit of an update. So I had one was the postcards. Oh my gosh, let me show you. They're right here. So remember how you started this with writing postcards? Yeah. I had postcards made up. Oh my goodness. Do you see that?
Are they like actual pictures of your family?
Yeah. So it's a postcard that I had made. Isn't that so cool?
Yes.
Well, that was my personal address on there. We might blur that out. But I had these postcards made. I had 250 of them made. So I'm hopefully going to write a lot of these. And the goal was to write 112 because I'm splitting my number with a friend. 224 was the number I was going to hit. I have one postcard so far written and not sent. So that's not going so hot.
Who did you write your first postcard to?
She doesn't listen to the podcast, but her name is Sally. And she's a good girlfriend from Utah. And I just miss her and her family so much. And it's weird. I'm like, what do I share on a postcard that is public that anybody could read? But the whole idea behind it is that I want to have a personal outreach to people. I don't want to send them a generic, you know, just photograph of my family every Christmas and that's all they get from me. I wanted to actually, you know, write something. So I don't know. I'm still working on it.
Incidentally, in 2011, when I wrote my postcard podcast, when I wrote my postcards, my first postcard was to this friend that I was at her house when she was washing dishes and had a fight.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun.
My first postcard was to her, Annie, and the second postcard, the last postcard was to Rebecca.
Okay. So you actually did say your friend's name on the podcast. That's fun.
I did.
Yeah.
It's okay. She's all right.
And then the other one is I needed to run, I think it's like 1,116 miles. Oh, no, to go. So it was like 1,200 miles this year I was going to run. I've run 84 miles so far. So 84 miles in the month of January have been run.
Yeah, right on.
That's my update. Should we land this plane?
Well, did you want to ask me how I was doing on my resolutions?
You don't have any resolutions.
I have two, actually.
Oh, okay.
Well, and they're the same. I mean, they're not the same, but yes, they're kind of, I'm kicking them into gear in February. One is the thing I said before, which is just like really to be gentle with things. And so I'm starting a version of 30 soft today where I'm going to try and I got 30 days with some specific benchmarks I want to help hit around changing some behaviors gently in my life. And then the second one is I want to be a person who does things. Like I've been on this trip since I went to South Carolina and I went to that concert with my mom. Remember that story? And I was like, and people just go out on a Saturday night to like a concert in the park and they do things.
Uh-huh.
And I would just be at my house maybe doing nothing.
Right.
And then when I was in DC this last weekend, we were driving by this little park and I looked over to the left and I was with Annie and there was people just sitting there like reading the paper on a Saturday afternoon. And I was like,
I want to do that.
Who does that? Like, so the other night I was sitting in my bed and I just got home from, not my bed, I was sitting on my couch. I got home from work. I was cozied up. I was having some dinner and our mutual friend texted me and said, hey, let's go out and get something to eat. And I was like, I do not want to do that. But I was like, but
I want to do
things.
I want
to be a person who does things.
Yeah.
So I did. I put my pants back on. I put my dress pants back on instead of my pajama pants. And I put my shoes on and I went out and I hung out. And so I have two. One is to be gentle.
Yeah.
With change in my life.
Yeah.
And the second one is to do things.
Okay.
And maybe that's actually what the heart of what you're trying to talk about right now is if you're going to help your partner change,
mm-hmm.
you got to be gentle. But if you're going to change, you got to do things. And so there's a thing that you need to like prioritize as you try to, you know, move the direction of your relationship towards something that feels positive and hopeful.
Mm. Are you going to let us know?
Why not start right now? Because January is the new February. And I think you still have time to register for the workshop, and you still have time to get your escape room. If you live in a big city and go to escapely.com and use our code, I think it's MTR20. You still have time to like initiate new stuff.
Change.
Because why not?
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay, hold on. I just have to go back because you said something that's really important, which is we get really used to, I'm running this morning with my girlfriend. And she said, you know, I've tried to do this thing, but I end up like in the middle of it, I get better. And so then I never actually make that appointment. I was like, man, that's the thing with couples therapy is like you're in a hard spot.
Yeah.
But then gradually you start to feel better. And so you never actually make that appointment with the therapist. And so the time, this is like, right, like the time to fix your roof is when it's sunny. The time to fix your marriage is not when you're in the middle of a really hard time. It's when you're feeling a little bit better, a little more connected, a little more open.
Yeah.
So even if your relationship has gone through hard things, but it's not currently, come to the workshop. Like that's a great, or maybe you're premarital and you're like, man, we're still really in love. So cool. Learn some skills that when you do hit the rocky part.
Those workshops are better when you're in a good spot because you're not trying to fix something. You're trying to optimize something.
Yes. And so,
it's like taking your car in for maintenance. But we'll be there.
Yeah.
We'll be in the right place.
We'll actually be there. So the workshop's February 9th and 10th. You can still register on the website. We'll have it open all the way up until probably the day before, which is totally, well, maybe the day, 2 days before, because I have to get your materials to you. But it's $450 for the couple, and you get to spend Friday evening and Saturday with us. It's 9 full hours of double duty time with Zach and myself, but more importantly, it's time with your partner that you're going to just, you will always remember it. So, I'm going to land this plane.
Cool.
And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. On our website, Marriage Therapy Radio, if you look on, kind of scroll down a little bit on the right-hand side, it says our weekly series or a weekend intensive. The weekend intensive this winter is coming up. It's on February 9th and 10th. February 9th is from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So it's a little bit like a date night where we're going to move you through some fun exercises that are friendship based. And then we'll spend all day Saturday talking about how to communicate better, how to navigate conflict, and how to grow your relationship stronger in the future. You can register there. It's $450 for both of you to attend, including your workshop materials and 9 full hours with Zach and myself. Thanks for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.